Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. We're in for a treat today, not just because we're done talking about the Star Wars prequels, which I'm really glad to be done with, but my hometown... best friend since we were 4 years old, best man at my wedding, Alec Nethercott, is here as the guest host.
There, you said it. That you just laid that down. I was the best man. We fought for years about who was your best man.
I know. I'm just hoping Mike and Stephen Gibson are listening right now because they're probably just freaking out. Because I told both of them they were my best friend, but made them promise not to tell anyone else. They couldn't go public with it. So,
well,
cat's out of the bag.
Cat's out of the bag the in front of 18,000 brave little listeners. Yeah.
Well, I did ask you, I think, to say a little something at my wedding luncheon.
I did, do you remember what I said?
You talked the story about me being opinionated about peanut butter.
Yes.
Which was Hermweezy's story.
Yes, which is Hermweezy's story, which is, I think David has an opinion about everything. So we called him out on it one time and we said, David, I think you have an opinion about everything on earth. And he said, that's not true. Like, for example, peanut butter, crunchy or smooth? I don't have an opinion. Really? Yeah, I like crunchy. That was your response. Yeah. And that was the short story I shared.
Yeah. And so I did. I asked you to say something. I believe you were the only one I asked, but that somehow turned into every one of my groomsmen saying something.
That's true.
So it got the gray area of who is the best man was more gray than ever.
Well, I think Michael was going to be, or at least had a shot at being your best man, but then he kept putting stickers all over your back and you got really mad at him.
Yeah. He was just pissing me right off with all the sticker stuff. So I decided mid-wedding day to just call an audible and switch it.
And you promoted me.
Like, all right, Mike, you're done. Yeah. Your best man, you've been relieved of your duties. Alec is up.
I've been promoted just like Darth Vader promotes that one commanding officer.
Oh, yeah, the guy out of nowhere. He's like, oh, what?
He's like, you.
What's great is tomorrow after work, Lindsay and I are actually driving down to Phoenix to visit Michael and his wife, Natalie. Yep. And Friday night, we're going to watch Spectre.
Okay.
And then we're going to do, I'm going to bring my mic and we're going to do a podcast. So I'm going to bring him on for the first time and we're going to have Clay. Clay will FaceTime in as well. So it'll be a three-person pod on Spectre.
Fun.
So I might regret mentioning that best man stuff since both of them were groomsmen because I will soon be doing a podcast with them and they might just kind of gang up on me.
Well, no, consider it a test to see if they're listening to your podcast.
Oh, yeah. That's a great idea.
That's great. I say.
Well,
shoot.
Listening.
I am grateful for you bringing me on the show. I must say I'm a little bit nervous. But thrilled to be here. I'm a big fan. And I'm hoping you'll give me a little tour of your of the staff there and who you're if I can meet the writers and just kind of see.
Yeah, they're all behind the glass. But yeah.
Okay.
Well, thankfully, this isn't your first time in front of a microphone because if you go to alecnethercottmusic.com, you have an album.
alecnethercott.com.
Excuse me. Do you want to minus the music from that URL? Just alecnethercott.com.
If I remember to pay my hosting fee, which is...
We'll have to take a look at
we'll
that.
We'll have to find out. It's been a while.
Well, you started listening to the podcast recently, and then you texted me out of the blue and said, can I come on for A New Hope?
That's right.
And my question is, why A New Hope instead of, say, like Empire Strikes Back?
Well, you know... A New Hope probably means the most to me. I don't know. I think I've probably seen it more. I think,
Is it your favorite of the Star Wars?
I would probably say I have more memories. Like when I think of Star Wars, I think of A New Hope because I think of the way I felt when I first saw was introduced to Luke Skywalker, mm-hmm. you know, these ideas like the Force and kind of the relationships. It kind of sets the scene. So that's probably why.
Yeah.
Because I just love the movie. I don't know if I'd say it's my favorite, but yeah.
So I think a good sign that these movies are classics and amazing is, for me, each one of them, Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi, have actually all been my favorites of the trilogy at a different point. So like, for me as a kid, Return of the Jedi was my go-to, and I think it had to do with the fact that there was real conclusion. Like, the Empire ended, the Emperor was dead, Vader had turned good. You know, it was like, I think as a kid, I felt safe in that conclusion that everything was going to be okay. And I think that's one why I liked that one so much. And then when I got older and I was in high school and I was like, I guess more of like a movie snob and into the finer tastes of cinema.
Yes.
It was like all about The Empire Strikes Back, right? It's like the dark one and it's like the most well-made of the three and yada, yada, yada. And I think that's probably, more often than not, I think Empire Strikes Back is the one people reference as the best of them. And it might be. It's such a just terrific.
That's a great
film.
Movie.
Yeah, it's amazing. My dad hates The Empire Strikes Back.
Really?
Because he would. Well, he doesn't hate the movie. He hates the fact that he had to wait 3 years in between The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi.
Oh,
he told me
goodness.
It was like the most grueling wait because my dad's like a huge Han Solo fan. Like, that's his guy. And like, that's who he loves. And he's stuck in Carbonite for 3 years. My dad was like, my dad can't handle cliffhangers like at all. he hates it. So he has this weird bitterness towards it. He's like, well, Empire Strikes Back, that's not the best one at all. They put that guy in Carbonite. He had to wait 3 years to figure out when he got out, how he got out. Like, he's like, you don't understand. You just pop in a DVD and you can see exactly what happened. I had to wait 3 years. He's like, it was miserable. Like, they shouldn't have done that to us. Like, he's like legitimately upset about it.
Erased 3 years from my life.
Yeah. 3 years of
wondering. I don't even know what happened.
Yeah. Oh, it's hilarious.
I had a couple kids. That would actually explains a lot. That's probably when you were born, David.
My dad, when the first Star Wars, so when A New Hope came out, which was just called Star Wars on its release, it's 1977. My dad is actually living in Cleveland, Ohio. He's on his 2-year Mormon mission.
Okay.
And they were typically on Mormon missions, you're not allowed to watch movies. It's like that's just not something you're allowed to do. But there'll be occasionally special circumstances. So they were given permission to watch Star Wars. Like, it was
no
viewed
kidding.
As like, yeah, crazy. It was viewed as like a motivational type of somehow, right? I don't know if they maybe equated the Force with God and I don't know if those themes had anything to do with it, but they were allowed to go. And my dad had kind of this nerdy missionary companion that was like pushing, like begging him to go, you know, like really wanted to go. My dad said to him at the time, it looked like just some cheesy 70s sci-fi film, like the, you know, that come around a dime a dozen in the 70s. He watched it the first time and he saw it 7 times total, 7 weekends in a row after that. They watched it. So the next 7
PDs. On his mission.
On his mission, he saw Star Wars 7 times. He loved it. And I talked to him earlier today because I wanted to get, you know, I wasn't alive in 77, neither were you, but I wanted to get like, I really want to figure out like how this became a phenomenon. There were so many sci-fi movies and TV shows and all that stuff. Like, why this thing exploded on the first one. So why, you know? So I was curious to get my dad's take, and he said his favorite moment is when Han Solo comes back during the Death Star trench run, when you thought he's gone for like good, when he like left for the money, you know, and he comes back and saves Luke by blasting Vader
saves
out.
The day. Yeah. Yeah,
my dad was just like pumped, loved it. Like, that was his favorite part in the whole movie. Yeah.
No,
like
that
said,
is a great part.
He's a Han Solo guy.
You think he's got, well, because it's at that moment you realize, you know, you realize who he is, that there's some good in him. He's not just a mercenary, but he's a hero. He's one of the heroes. Yeah. He's in it for the team.
And he was just scummy enough throughout the movie that you could believably, you know, it was believable that he would have left and not come back. Like, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't one of those things like, oh yeah, sure, you're going to come right back. Like, no, I think that it was well within the realm of possibility that dude was not coming back.
Yeah. Well, he's got some drama. He's got some bills to pay.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got some Jabba's to hut.
He's got some Jabba's to hut.
But I want to talk a little bit about the framing of A New Hope. So, to finish my thought about my favorite movies, I talk about The Empire Strikes Back being my favorite for a long time, until about a year ago. I kind of had this weird moment watching A New Hope when I was like, no, this one's my favorite. And maybe it'll change 10 more times in my lifetime. But honestly, I think A New Hope is the definitive Star Wars film for me, because it's the most complete story. Like, you get the character development, you get the major conflict, the climax and resolution. Like, obviously I wanted more movies to come, but for some reason they didn't make 2 and 3. Like, it'd still stand on its own. And it's because of that, I think it's my favorite. And so what we'll do a little bit later on, we're going to go through our 5 favorite moments or scenes from the movie. Before we do that, I want to give a little bit more context to George Lucas, like who he was at this time, what he had done, why would people go see this movie? Because George Lucas was a young, not super well-known filmmaker who had made only really one film of consequence, which was American Graffiti. Have you seen that movie before?
I have not.
Okay. It's with Ron Howard. It takes place in Modesto or somewhere in that area. It's about like the cruising culture of the 60s. Where you just cruise down the street.
George Lucas? No kidding.
Yeah, George Lucas. Yep.
How did I not know that?
Huh. And it has a cameo by Harrison Ford. And then that's why, you know, you brought him in for Star Wars. But so really, that's the only thing he made. They didn't have a huge budget, though he was probably given more money than the average person that was starting their second film.
Now, answer me this. Did he write episodes 4 through 6?
Yes.
Before 1 through 3.
Oh, are you asking if he had the prequel stuff figured out?
Yeah. Did he have did he write them like a storybook where it's like,
yeah,
he knew kind of what was going to happen? Or
no, that's
was
a really
he just
question.
A visionary and said, no, I'm going to, there's, you know, years down the road, I'm going to make more of these? Or.
Yeah, that's good. That's a really good question. Because Star Wars in 1977 was, you know, from the get-go was episode 4. He clearly was, he planned on telling the story from the middle, right? Like, he was starting in the middle, and that was part of the, I guess part of the out of the box approach to Star Wars was like, this was a lived in world. Things had already been happening and we're starting in the middle. Right.
I love that, by the way.
Yeah, no, it's seriously, that's brilliant. From what I understand, and there's probably, some Star Wars nuts that know a lot more than me that can and will correct me on Twitter. But George Lucas had the broad strokes of what, that there was Anakin Skywalker, you know, that broad strokes about what they would be. I don't think he had any real detail of what's like included, you know, in the actual prequel movies, because keep in mind, he's writing 4, 5, and 6. And these are really good stories. And there's no way he wrote those stories around the same time, because those things were not written in the same.
Let's
era.
Be honest. Yeah.
Yeah. Holy cow. My goodness. But like, this is the thing about George Lucas. He deserves all the credit in the world for the vision of this thing. At the same time, it's really crazy to see how lucky he got with the people, other people that were involved in this whole project. Because, like, okay, first off, his best friends at this time, other young filmmakers, a guy named Francis Ford Coppola, who directed The Godfather, Godfather 2, Apocalypse Now, you know, like,
you may have heard of him.
One of the greatest filmmakers of all time. And then, of course, Spielberg, you know, famously his friend.
Who's that?
He did this movie called The Terminal with Tom Hanks.
Never heard of
it. and so Spielberg, who was a couple years, they met in 1967 at this UCLA student film festival when George Lucas was 20 and Spielberg was 18. And, you know, of course, Spielberg goes on to do Jaws. And apparently he was like begging Lucas to be a second unit director or whatever on Star Wars. And Lucas, like, they were friendly, but they had like a healthy rivalry. And he's like, nope, he wouldn't let him do it. He kept begging. He's like, won't let him do it.
Really?
Which, yeah. And like, it's so crazy. I mean, he wasn't quite Spielberg, but he had made Jaws, right? Which is my favorite movie ever. I think it's the greatest film of all time. So,
oh, that's a great movie.
Yeah. It's perfect. And so, also a couple things. So George Lucas has the vision for this whole universe. He deserves that credit. A couple, what I think are key players to the success here, is John Williams, who wrote a score that is unbelievable and obviously has stood the test of time. And he was introduced to John Williams from Steven Spielberg because John Williams did the Jaws score, right? So that relationship bore that fruit. And then the art director on this film was a guy named Ralph McQuarrie. I believe that's McQuarrie. I never know how to say his last name. But this is the dude that came up with the design for Chewbacca, Darth Vader, the Stormtroopers. Like, George explained to him what he wanted. And this guy actually did the mock-ups that George Lucas used to present to 20th Century Fox to get funding for the film. And it's amazing if you look at this dude's artwork, how much of it is still retained in the actual finished execution, which is so rare.
So he can be credited for the famous...
Well, dude, to me, the Stormtrooper... outfits. The Stormtrooper, like, costume is... I don't think there's a better body armor in cinema. Like, I think it's so dope. Every time I see
Stormtrooper... Oh, it's awesome. Yeah. Oh, it looks so cool.
Yeah.
When I first saw him, I remember telling my parents that I was convinced those were the good guys because they were... that armor was so cool. It could only be good. It couldn't be used for evil.
Exactly. It was so good that even Han and Luke in this movie wanted to get in one of the costumes.
And they did.
And they did. Like, some of my earliest movie memories is around the age of 4, the same age in which I met you. I have, like, very vivid memories of saying goodbye to my older brother and older sister as they went to go walk out to go catch the bus to go to school because I wasn't in kindergarten yet. And as soon as I said goodbye and the door closed, I just sprint into my living room, grab the VHS tapes with Star Wars, put them in, and then I had like a pile of these like white tube socks that I'd put across both arms, like up past my elbows, and then like from my feet all the way up to like my torso, you know, and that was my Stormtrooper costume. Like I wanted to be a Stormtrooper. So I would like put these four white tube socks on that I was a Stormtrooper, and then I could watch it. I had to be a Stormtrooper in order to watch it though. But like without people like Ralph McQuarrie and John Williams, which had such a critical part of the success here, you know, like Star Wars.
4 years old is the same age as Gwen, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, totally.
So, if I see Gwen with socks on her arms or putting on some weird costumes, I'll have Star Wars to thank.
Oh, yeah.
But you seem to turn out okay.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, mostly. Mostly.
I mean, you have kind of a dirty mustache right now.
Yeah, I have a mustache right now. It's crazy. Like I was at the mall this weekend and I went and they have a Lego store, which is awesome. And I went in and the employees stopped me like in the doorway. They're like, stop, whoa, what are you doing? Like there's kids in here. There's, you can't come in here. Like,
so I need help. I need help. Finding my puppy.
Around and I just, yeah, I left. So
yeah. Candy is dandy, but liquor is liquor.
Sean Fleming. Oh gosh. Oh,
you kids ever seen a wiener?
Oh no. My mom listens to this podcast. Thanks, Linda. Sorry, Linda. I don't know why I said thanks.
Sorry about it.
Oh gosh. I'm not cutting that. So so quickly, let's why Star Wars worked. So this is a movie where we have no background going in 1977. We have no, it's impossible for you and I to get in that headspace because we grew up with these movies. Like when I was so young, I watched all three of them. I didn't know which one was the first one. Like it was just one ongoing movie. It wasn't until I got older when I realized there was some sequential order to this whole thing.
Yeah.
So we never knew what it was like to watch that having zero context. There was always context. Darth Vader was always Luke's father, right? Here are some of my thoughts and I want to hear some of yours, but clearly the simplicity of the story has a lot to do with its success. But these are the key things. One, you have a truly evil, oppressive enemy that's made very clear at the very beginning. You have a farm boy to hero story, like the underdog. You got a princess, the scoundrel, reluctant hero guy in Han Solo. You have the accomplished actor in the role of a wise sage, like in Obi-Wan Kenobi. And then with Lucas, who was obsessed with technology, we have the combination, near perfect combination of cutting edge technology with a simple and powerful story. I don't know why I never really made this connection before, but like the story of Luke Skywalker, and I don't know if it's fair to say it originated with Luke, but I think it was fully fleshed out with Luke, but it's not that different than Harry Potter, who is the parents are not in the scene. They're grown up in a circumstance in which they want to get out and see the world. And, it, you know, it's a little bit worse with Harry Potter than it is with Luke, but still frustrating for Luke, you know. And it's like the boy, the whole like the boy who lives, who's destined for greatness, right? Pretty common theme in a lot of movies, you know. But like Luke Skywalker is the, I mean, he's the epitome of that role, right?
Well, and he's very, yeah, he's very normal. I think that's why, I don't know, it's so, especially as a young man or, you know, a kid, I like your story of when you dress up like a stormtrooper. Because I remember being a young kid and, you know, after watching Star Wars, you know, the just the kind of feeling the magic of it and feeling like I could relate to Luke, who was young, who's kind of normal, but he found out that he's this chosen one and that he's got, you know, there's this secret power out there that, you know, he's really good at, which is the Force. You know, I remember laying awake at night in bed, trying to move things with my mind, just convinced I could do it. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Just looking at things across the room. And then I remember nights where I could have sworn I actually moved something.
Yeah.
And then I'd go to sleep with a smile, like my training for the day is complete.
Yeah. Yeah. You're one step and closer to being
I'm
a
one
Jedi.
Step closer. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. but just, yeah, that's part of the reason I love A New Hope is because there's so much nostalgia there of watching that and then, you know, kind of reliving the feelings I have of the first times watching it as I was younger. Yeah. So I love that about it.
Oh, yeah, that's great. That's a really good anecdote. Yeah, I love this movie. The thing is, the movie starts out with these two droids who are, for the most part, inconsequential until Princess Leia decides to hide the Death Star plans in R2-D2. And all of a sudden, they're the most important droids.
Very important, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I love the idea that these are just two droids that are just droids, right? Like, they're just, when you first see C-3PO, there's a lighter tone version of C-3PO, like, right behind him, you know? And he's just, yeah, like, one of many, right? And then they soon become just the ones that everyone's looking, like, you know, the Empire's looking for. And we see the movie, we see this movie through their eyes, right? Like, we follow the droids. And I love that, which is one of the reasons why it makes me so upset that when they did the prequels, they shoehorned 3PO and R2-D2 in as if they've been there all along, you know?
I was like, just going to ask you how you felt about that, because I hated
it's terrible.
That they put them in all the prequels, that you're just like, no, just leave them out of this. Don't act like they were there for this whole journey.
And then they conveniently get their memory wiped, right? Like
yeah.
It's ridiculous.
No, thanks. Well, and we know technology, you know, obviously increases exponentially every year. So the chances that those droids would be current, you know, the current standard for droids, by the time episode 4 comes out, is not very likely,
right,
obviously.
Right.
And anyway, what's interesting is I hated that they did that.
They're going to have that same problem with The Force Awakens, right? Because 30 years have passed. But we know we've
seen... And they're going to try to see... Yeah, exactly.
Well, we've seen... I think they might actually try and do something with showing, like, at least with 3PO, that he's a little bit outdated. Because we know that one of his arms is red. Like, it's a replacement part. And we don't... I have no idea why. We've just seen that in screenshots. And they just... Like, a commercial just came out and it shows him with a red arm. And, you know, I'm sure we'll figure that out. But, like, they'll have to get around that at some point. The thing is Anakin Skywalker, Darth Vader, built C-3PO. Like, I wish that wasn't, like, I wish I didn't know that, you know, like, that's the dumbest thing.
Yeah. Because there's no way.
Like, this is an enormous galaxy. Like, please. Like, that reminds me, a coworker sent me this GIF that cracked me up, but it's just this moving, switching back and forth, the scene in Empire Strikes Back when Darth Vader says, you know, Obi-Wan never told you about your father and Luke says, he told me enough. He told me you killed him. And he's like, no, I am your father. And then and he's like, no, that's impossible. And then it goes back to Vader. And he's like, and you know that yellow droid he got with you? I built him when I was 7. Like, no, that's impossible. it's just like perfectly illustrated how ridiculous the idea that C-3PO was built by Darth Vader.
Oh my gosh, like, give me a break.
Yeah, I've talked about this in on previous pods, but like I believe even some of the best filmmakers in the world have a prime of their career that's very similar to an athlete. And then once you're out of your prime, that's it. There's no going back. You know, it's like Michael Jordan cannot be Michael Jordan again. That's over, right? And Lucas made the prequels past his prime. There was no, You know, he was out of that area. He was done. I mean, Francis Ford Coppola, who I talked about earlier, made some of the best movies ever. He hasn't made a good movie in who knows how long. Like, yeah, just...
Yeah.
Dude's done.
Which is sad.
It is sad. Spielberg's the one that bucks the trend because he has two clear moments that are broken up in terms of good movies he's made. But we'll be doing a Spielberg pod, actually, sometime in the future. But let's get on to our top five scenes. And we'll start at number five and work our way to our favorite scenes. And so if you want to start us off with your number five, let's do it.
Okay. Let's see what we have here. Okay. Well, I didn't know we were starting at number five, but I'm...
Oh, we can start...
No.
You know, let's go ahead and start with number three if that would make it easier.
Nope, here comes five. But don't make fun of me. But it is. It's the reunion at the end after Luke blows up.
Yeah.
It blows up the Death Star. He comes back. Han's there. You've just been tense and kind of worried. And then there's this joyful reunion where, you're just so happy and everyone's hugging. And, you know, even though R2-D2's looking in, like he's in bad shape, the guy gives you a confident, we'll take care of him right away. Or, what I can't remember the exact words he says. Yeah. But you're like, okay, that means he's going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know, but everyone's happy and it's kind of this happy ending. Because I was worried about R2-D2.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because I rewatched this again as soon as I got home from work today just to take a few notes, and I noticed there's genuine jubilation in that scene. Like they are so pumped, they're stoked out of their minds, and they should be with what they just did. But like it's a really authentic moment, and then it does a little cutaway to then the medal ceremony scene. Which the music too is some of my favorite music in the whole. We opened the pod with that song from the very end. And
nice. Yeah, I remember.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. What's funny is they play that music when you're exiting Star Tours at Disneyland, and like it's like Pavlov and his dogs for me because I exit Star Tours and that music's playing and I feel
and you're
like
drooling.
I accomplished something. Like I'm about to get a medal. I'm like, yep.
I did it. Hey, I was just there a month ago. That was that ride is still as great as ever, except they changed it.
They have so all fun. These versions of it. Yeah, it's terrific. All right, so my number five.
Give it to me.
I'm going to go with the scene where Luke discovers the message from Leia inside R2-D2. So the "Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope" scene.
Oh no, that's my number. Yeah, that's my
it's
number.
It's fine. We're gonna have overlaps. That's fine.
Okay.
Where is it on your list?
It's my number four. It's my next one.
Oh, okay. Well, then we can talk about it together. What I love about this is the
you
beginning.
Go first.
This is the beginning. This is the thing that piques Luke's curiosity, because even though he's frustrated with Uncle Owen, he badly wants out of there. And I guess quick side note on Luke, and when you talked about how Luke's a real character, he's pretty whiny in this movie.
Oh, I want to go to Tosh's to get some power converters.
you're like, shut up and harvest the crops. Like, what are you?
You guys are so lame.
Yeah.
I think that kind of establishes his adolescence. He's a teenager.
Actually, I don't think it's annoying. It's hilarious. It adds authenticity. Even he's mouthing off to Han. Yeah, I thought you said this ship could outrun that. And he's like, watch your mouth, kid.
Yeah.
He's just constantly being annoying.
I like it too because it shows that he's kind of has all this energy bottled up that he doesn't really belong there, that he's supposed to be
totally,
he's that's under gonna get,
yeah and I'm gonna talk yeah. a lot more about that in a later scene on my list. But what I was gonna say was is as much as he wants out, he does have this commitment to family and to Uncle Owen, because even later on with Obi-Wan, when Obi-Wan's come with me, train to be a Jedi, just like your father, open invitation. And he's like, no, I got to go back and do it. We got the harvest coming up. And he's making all these excuses. Uncle Owen's not there to tell him that, So clearly there's something that's keeping him there. But the help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, or my only hope is the first moment. That's the first domino, aside from picking up the droids from the Jawas. But that's the first domino of something's going down and he wants to be a part of it. And that was that's the ticket, figuring out who Obi-Wan Kenobi is, what she needs. She you're our only hope. What's going on? And that's the start of it all. So I really like that scene. So that's my number five, and you're number four. Did you have anything to add on that?
Well, kind of, but yeah. So I'll just add that Yeah, something about that message. It's so mysterious and intriguing, and it's like,
yeah,
something about the audio file. You know, it's a little bit grainy, and it was kind of the first time I had seen a hologram like that.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
What do you call it? A hologram?
Yeah, I think so.
You know, and you're kind of watching it, and she, you know, it's this projection, and you know, it's kind of a technology you don't really understand, which I think is interesting that they thought, you know, maybe today we would use a technology like that, which we, in some ways we do.
And we do to put Tupac on stage at Coachella.
Oh my gosh. Give me a break. Exactly. So she comes out with that message. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope. And it's kind of, it's like this mystery, and it piques his interest. I like that scene. So when I watched it again, I, you know, there was a bit of, you know, kind of excitement again watching that scene.
That's awesome. All right, then I'll jump in my
number four.
My number four. My number four is the scene in the Millennium Falcon when they're approaching the Death Star for the first time after looking for Alderaan, which had been blown to smithereens.
Yep.
And that this TIE fighter, you know, flies by, and they're like, that, you know, he's just like a scout ship. Like, how is he this far into space? And
really
he's
quick,
like, oh, he's going to that. What's up?
Really quick, since you just mentioned TIE fighter.
Yeah.
Do your best TIE fighter impression, like the sound effect, because it's the same every time.
I feel like you've got something prepared, because I don't.
I don't have anything prepared, but I want to see you try.
Oh my gosh.
Because it.
Oh, I want to see you. I don't think do it I with can make mouth. That noise with my mouth. If I attempt it right now,
it's kind of like a dinosaur, like a.
Yeah. No, or it like,
I don't think that came out like you.
What was that?
Like you thought it would.
My mind attempted something that my mouth didn't actually follow through with.
That's more like Chewbacca. Chewie, get back in the Millennium Falcon.
We are killing it with those TIE fighter sound effects.
Yeah,
I feel like there's TIE fighters all around me right now. That's crazy.
Well, because it is. It's the same sound effect every time.
Yeah, it is. It's like the Wilhelm, what they call the Wilhelm scream, that when like a guy falls off an edge, and it's like, it's a famous yell that you hear in so many movies. Like, yeah, huh. You know what I'm talking about? It's a very specific yell, but it's like an inside joke, because it's a sound bite that they grab from an old World War II movie, era movie or something. I forget what it's called, but it's called the Wilhelm scream, and filmmakers use it like in so many different movies in just like one spot.
Really?
You'd know exactly what I'm talking about if I played it for you. In fact, I will play it right now in the pod for people to hear. So they know what I'm talking about. But the Wilhelm screen. Anyway, just reminded me of that.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, so you're fine.
They're approaching the Death Star.
That was a good exercise. I'm really glad I went for that. I have no regrets about that.
Sometimes I just like to do fun things.
But anyway, so they're approaching the Death Star, and they see this TIE fighter, and they're like, oh, he's going towards that moon. And then Obi-Wan Kenobi, so this is what I write down, the quote, that's no moon, that's a space station. And the look on their faces, this is the first, I think, you know, even though they blew Alderaan out of the water, we know that they're inside this big, huge space station. For whatever reason, for me, this is a really an effective scene in establishing the enormity of not just the Death Star, but of the Empire and its power. It's like they thought this thing was a moon, and it's a space station, like, and it just blew up a planet. Like, these are legit bad guys. Like, this is a very uneven fight. The fact that Han Solo was so dismissive, like, nah, it's way too big to be a moon, and then it's just like, and before they know it, they're sucked in by its tractor beam. And it brings them into the heart of the space station. So, like, the worst possible place for our heroes to be is in the middle of that thing, you know? And so, this really.
How are they going to make it out?
Yeah. It's a crappy spot to be in. But in my opinion, they convincibly, like, or it's very conceivable what they actually do, and it's very convincing how they do it. Of course, they go to rescue the princess, and I love everything that goes on in the Death Star sequence. But anyway, that scene I think is very effective. So that's my number four. What's your number three?
That's good. Okay. Number three, I gotta say Luke destroying the Death Star. Yeah. You know, I feel like there's a lot of scenes. Three. Is it really?
Yeah. I have It's the Death Star trench run, and the specifically when Obi-Wan tells him to use the Force, and he just like turns his machine off and just goes for it.
Yeah, I love that part. Well, so because there's a lot of scenes where, you know, I guess you could say that the odds are, you know, like you have like 1,000 stormtroopers pointing guns at Han Solo or whatever, and they all happen to miss, and he's walks away unscathed, you know, or whatever. But, you know, which is slightly unrealistic, one could argue. But at this scene, you know, like we've lost most of the X-Wing fighters. Like they're dropping like flies. Luke is like the last chance, you know, so it's a little bit more realistic, I guess, because they're, you know, people are dying. They're like, they're risking lives. There's people who, you know, they're so dedicated. They're in that trench and they're trying to
stay
hit
on
their target.
Stay on target.
Stay on target. Copy that, Red Leader.
I can't shake him. That's such a good hero moment for, you know, for the farm boy from Tatooine. It's such a good ending. Which is why, ultimately why it's my favorite of the three. It's just solid. All right. Well,
because that's
that
big.
Number three.
Yeah.
What's that?
Well, I mean, well, the Death Star is huge. I mean, even watching this back, you know, and seeing more impressive CGI and stuff today, you know, but looking back at the old film and as they're approaching, I don't think that scene has CGI retrofitted into it or do you
not so much during the trench run part, like the approach and the special editions, which is probably worth bringing up. I recently had downloaded all the despecialized versions, so the version I watched today was the original theatrical, so it had no CGI. But
okay,
like in the special edition, the approach, the X-Wings are, you know, CGI, but all the stuff in the middle I think is mostly retained. The actual explosion of the Death Star is definitely different in the old version than the specialized.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, either way, the Death Star is just enormous.
Oh yeah.
And
I guess it should be worth mentioning, you know, like they have this small one little tiny weakness, right? The small little hole that they have to shoot these little torpedoes, whatever.
Torpon. That's a word.
Yeah, I'm gonna stick. Yeah, I'm gonna stand by that.
They look like tampons, but they're a little bit more dangerous.
Yeah, deadly, pew! Explosive. Yeah. We'll bring down a superstructure of a planet destroying, moon-sized
anyway, space station.
You know, Disney is doing these new Star Wars movies. Yeah, right, another trilogy, and then in between the 2 years. So it's 2 years between the three trilogy films. And in between those 2 years, they're doing what they're calling the anthology films, which are like the one-off stories in the Star Wars universe that just one-off. So the first one is called Rogue One. It'll come out next December. And it's the story about the band of rebel spies that stole the Death Star plans, the ones that Leia put into R2-D2. That's the plot of the movie, is how they stole the plans. Because they reference how the rebel spies stole them, but we don't know anything about them. We don't even know what happened to them. And so that's what the movie's gonna be about. And I love it. I think that's like such a fun story to chase. So
how did they confiscate the shuttle in Return of the Jedi? That's what I'd like to see that movie too.
We could get that anthology. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I was wondering
That's hard to get away with that. It's a pretty big ship. It's hard to hide that thing.
Okay. You ready for my number two?
Let's hear it.
For some reason, I love that scene. It's pretty brief, but it's when Obi-Wan is on the Death Star or in the Death Star, whatever you want to say. He rounds that corner, and Darth Vader's standing right there with his sword drawn, his lightsaber drawn, waiting for him, and he knows he's coming around the corner. And you see that kind of surprised look on Obi-Wan's face, because, you know, you could tell he feels something, but he doesn't expect that.
Yeah.
And then just that feeling of, oh yeah, it's about to go down.
Yeah.
And then it's followed by a kind of underwhelming lightsaber battle.
A fencing exercise.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you're watching it. especially if you're watching them in order. You just watched Revenge of the Sith, and they just had this mighty battle, which if I were to argue if there's anything, my favorite part of the prequels would be the fight scenes.
Totally.
I, you know, if you're not talking about like the music or, you know, whatever, because the music's great. But cool. Yeah, the fight scenes. So Obi-Wan and you know, Anakin have just had this amazing fight scene, and then years later it's like, ooh, that's you guys suck at fighting.
Yeah, I know. It's like we just had this insane battle on Mustafar. I left last time I saw you, you were slipping in some lava. So I was surprised later to find out you lived.
The last thing I said to you was I hate you.
I was like, yeah. And then it's like, well, let's do maybe like a 15% version of that fight right now. You know, it's just, you know, it's hard. Obviously you can't blame them, you know, when you're filmed that far apart and no special effects, but I do agree about the prequels. I that's one of the things I've mentioned about being able to see Jedi and Sith just go all out in lightsaber scene, like battle scenes, is something, you know, they couldn't do in the original. So that was nice to see that, with the exception of Yoda. They should have never done that. I never wanted to see that. I wish they had never seen it.
Oh, man. I know. I wish it were more of a mystery.
Yeah.
The legend. Oh, that's cool. Which reminds me of something you said when Jerome was on the show, which was...
Yeah, Jerome. Yeah.
I think it was this episode, but you were talking about how, you know, when Luke goes back home with Obi-Wan and they're talking about the Clone Wars... you know, you have this thought of, ooh, what are the Clone Wars?
Yeah.
But the prequels just ruin it, because you're looking back and you're like, that wasn't even that big of a deal. You know, like, no. I don't know. Yeah.
How inconsequential, a bunch of worthless, skinny little droids against non-human clones. Like, terrific.
Yeah. Come on.
Ugh.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, that definitely, it hurts it a little bit, I would say.
Yeah, I've been learning. It's like this is therapy for me. These episodes on the prequels were literally like a form of therapy, like how to compartmentalize them, like because like
just talk about
like,
it.
Yeah, well, yeah, they can make me so angry. Like it undoes and destroys so much of what was good.
Well, there's still a lot of people in denial.
Yeah,
about the prequels
and fun. You know? And what's crazy is there's people who defend them, strongly defend them. I'll never understand.
Yeah.
I'll never share this with people. But
no, they need to talk about their feelings.
That was your number two?
Yes, right? That's my number two. Right.
So my number two is the Cantina sequence in Mos Eisley.
Okay.
Specifically two parts that happen in the sequence, but I love everything inside the Cantina. I'm not sure. I don't know if you watch Family Guy. I'm not a huge fan. I haven't watched a ton of episodes, but they occasionally have those really, really funny bits. And one of them is the Star Wars episode. And they've done several things on Star Wars, but they have this one scene in an episode in the Cantina where they recreate it. And they have the Cantina band, and they just finish playing that song. And they're like, all right, we're the Cantina band. Are there any requests? Play that same song. Okay, we'll play the same song. It's like the only song they know.
Yeah, it's going on for
and they're also so aliens long. that were weirdly bred and made to only play music. Like, it's like, well, we have this weird hole in front of our faces, and I guess all we can do is play instruments.
it's not very useful.
So what I love about the Cantina sequence is that you have these this crazy cast of characters. It's like really dirty and grimy and dark, and you see all these different aliens and people in these suits. It's all practical effects, and it just feels really worn, and it feels dangerous. It feels like, ugh, you know? Like, it really, like, just earlier, just moments earlier, Obi-Wan says, you know,
he preps him.
You won't find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. And it's like, that's a pretty good way of describing it. It's pretty terrible in there.
Yeah.
But the two parts is when that one guy, and I love the scene, when he's like, he doesn't like you. He's like, sorry. You know, it's like, I don't like you either. I have the death sentence on 12 systems. You'll be dead.
It's like, just leave him alone. He's like,
it's like, geez, your friend's got a butt for a face. Like, let's just chill. Like, let's calm down.
We didn't talk about that, but we could.
Yeah. Can we just have a light moment here? That's a butt. Okay. That's a butt.
You want me to take the low hanging fruit? Okay. Yeah. You have a butt face.
You don't like me. I'm not the one that's like mooning everyone constantly. Like, I don't like you.
But cover that up.
The part that I specifically like is how quickly Obi-Wan is willing to take out his lightsaber and cut that dude's arm off. Like, he's reasonable and says, hey, let's calm down. Let me get you something. And then he pushes Luke and he's like, and just the push where he pushes Luke and Luke kind of hits the table. It's like, okay, I'm going to pull out a lightsaber and I'm going to cut your arm off. And none of these people in here know that there are even Jedi that exist. And like, this hasn't been seen in 18 years or whatever. Like, but he pulls it out and then he gives this look around the canteen with this like weird smirk, like this kind of half smile smirk that Obi-Wan gives. That's like, yeah, I'm a Jedi. That was a lightsaber. Leave us alone.
Like, yeah, I'm in control.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was like, okay. And then they keep playing the song and everything. And no one, you know, any more requests? Same song. Okay.
Okay. Here's one for the kid in the back.
And then the second part in the cantina sequence that I love so much is the famous scene of Han shooting Greedo. The only shot that was fired in that sequence, right? And this is so crucial.
His acting is good there. I like that scene.
Oh, it's so good. And watching these despecialized versions where I watch the version where Han shoots, it's really – like you can't overstate how much meaning that has, because you're setting the stage for who – like we know he's a smuggler. We know he tried to overcharge them an enormous amount of money for a taxi ride. And you could tell he's, you know, not a great guy. And Greedo stops him, and they have this whole thing. He reaches down to his holster, grabs his blaster, and then when Greedo says, I've been looking forward to this day, and he's like, I bet you have. Boom, shoots him under the table, and he just drops, flips the bartender some money and a quick apology, and he's out of there. And it immediately
like
shows
a boss.
Him total like a boss, and you're just like, oh, this guy means business. So that's my number two. What is your number one?
Number one, okay. It's the trash compactor scene.
What? Oh, good.
I love that scene.
Good, good. Mine's a different number one, so I'm happy. I'm happy.
Okay, good.
Tell me why.
No, I love it. It's like they're totally trapped. It's like you think all hope is lost. Like they rescued the princess. Surely there's a way out, but they're totally blocked. And then she comes in and, you know, blasts through the garbage chute or whatever. And then they dive in. And you think they're, you know, there's going to be some kind of escape, but they're actually in another sticky situation. And I love the creativity. I love that there's a trash compactor monster. I love the, I love that scene. I love the tension that's throughout the whole scene, and you're not sure how they're going to get out. And, you know, and then, is it C-3PO or R2-D2 that ends up bailing him out? It's R2-D2, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he hacks the mainframe.
Yeah. R2-D2 is the only one that's useful. C-3PO is just kind of like an a-hole and just complain and just is really, really mean to R2.
He's a translator. Yeah, exactly. He's totally mean to R2. He needs to be nicer.
Yeah.
Because R2's doing work and he's just
R2's like this ambitious little peppy droid who's, you know, do whatever it takes to get it done, and C-3PO is just complaining.
Yeah. I do say, good fellow. Whatever.
So the more trash compactor scene, man. Like, if things weren't worse, that the walls are closing in, there's also something alive in there. So, yeah. Like,
yeah, and it's pulling. Yeah, exactly. It's pulling Luke under.
It's great. No, it's a really tense scene. As a kid, man, even when I knew they'd get out, it still freaked me out. I was so scared that they wouldn't make it, you know?
Yeah.
So good. So, my number one scene is what's called the binary sunset. And it's the scene back towards the beginning of the film. On Tatooine, right after Luke gets in the argument at the dinner table with Uncle Owen about like having to stay for another season. And like what happens here is like Luke, you know, he just picked up those droids. He just saw, like, heard from C-3PO that he was a part of the rebellion, you know, and you could see the light in his eyes, like, you're part of the rebellion. And then he saw the little Princess Leia help me Obi-Wan Kenobi. And it's fresh on his mind. Like, there's a world out there that he hasn't explored, right? And so he's talking to Uncle Owen. It's like, hey, our agreement, blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, I need you for another season. And he's just like...
But that's a whole nother year!
That's a whole nother year! and he storms off, and she's like, where are you going? You know, Aunt Beru, you know? And he's like, nowhere, you know, like, I guess, or whatever it was. I'm probably misquoting that. But he's like, nowhere, I guess, you know? Apparently nowhere, or something like that. Something to that effect. And then he goes, he steps outside, and the sun is setting. And there's the two suns on Tatooine. And this, to me, is the most powerful moment of the film, even and especially when I watch it today. It's It's 36 seconds long. Absolutely nothing happens because no words are spoken. He walks out there. John Williams' score hits that really powerful moment. Gives me the chills every time. And he watches the sunset. And it's that it's Luke looking out being like, there's something more for me out there. I can't be stuck here. And so for me, like for me, it completely illustrates why Star Wars captured like the collective.
And it says it so much better than if he were to say it in words.
Oh, it's this quiet moment after
you're looking out at the two. There's two moons or two suns or whatever those are.
Yeah, it's beautiful. The music, it's sunsetting, and the look on Mark Hamill's face and he's acting is just like, I don't belong here. Like, I'm meant for greater things. And so, like for me, that's what captures the collective imagination of an entire generation. That's why people love this movie, because that's the transition scene for Luke's two realities. The farm boy that's stuck doing chores with his uncle, because what Luke doesn't know yet, and what we know because we've seen the movie a million times, is that very next day, he's going to run into Obi-Wan Kenobi, learn that his father was a Jedi, see that his uncle Owen and Aunt Beru got torched by Imperial troopers, and he will leave the planet with a smuggler to go save a princess on an enormous planet-destroying space station. That's the next day.
Yeah.
So it's this transition scene that's really quiet, and you see the pain in his eyes, and he knows there's something more, and he has no idea that the next day his life is going to change forever. Like, and so it gives me the chills because I know what he doesn't know, and that's the music is so powerful, and it's just this... It's the sign of a good film. It's the sign of a good director to know when you need those types of small moments and breaks. That to me is just like the ultimate.
It's art.
Star Wars thing. Yeah, it's art. That's totally art.
It's absolutely art. I love it. Yeah,
that's so good. So anyway, there it is.
Okay, that's good. I like that. That's a great number one.
Thanks. Gatsing gets me every time. This from top to bottom, it's amazing to me that this was the first movie in this saga, because the characters feel so established. Like even the Jawas, which are like weirdly lovable, like everything about the world, the different like creatures and aliens, the people, the fact this was the very first movie in it, it just seems remarkable to me.
The details. There's so many little details. Like even when, you know, Obi-Wan comes up and says, you know, sand people startle easily, but they'll come back with more. You know, he knows about them. And later he's describing them. He says, you know, sand people walk in a single file to hide their numbers. And, you know, it kind of gives a personality to these different races that exist. It's so creative. The X-Wings, you know, how the X-Wings go into attack mode and they spread into an X, and how the... I just love it, all the details.
How's the X-Wing design now, like, 30 years later, is still totally bad A? You know what I mean? It's like, we don't need to do anything. They made Poe, one of the new characters in Force Awakens, Poe. His is, like, black and orange, which is amazing, and it looks so dope. But for the most part, the design's the same, because it doesn't need to change. Like,
yeah. Well, and it's not laughable. You know, like, you watch some 70s movies today. And it doesn't age well. Yeah, it doesn't age well, exactly. Yeah. Which, speaking of not aging well, you mentioned this in a previous pod, but you were talking about how the CGI hasn't aged well. I had that thought this whole time watching, just thinking, why did you do this? I would much rather have the, you know, where you have the goofy, you have the stormtrooper riding on the beast and he looks super goofy, or Jabba the Hutt and he looks like a freaking idiot. So let me ask you. If you were to, I mean, I know this is a great movie. I mean, you were pretty darn critical of the prequels. I mean, I've listened to your past three podcasts.
That's fair.
And you were pretty quick to find the cons in your pros and cons lists. Now, if you had to be critical of this movie, tell me what the cons would be of A New Hope.
Gosh, this is like the inverse of Attack of the Clones, where there were nothing but cons and no pros.
Yeah.
It's like the opposite. Well, I mean, You can nitpick any film. There's always going to be little things. I would say the con of this film would be, I think they spent too much dead time towards the beginning of the film with C-3PO and R2-D2 on the Jawa, the little sand crawler. That scene lasts longer than it needs to, and it feels like weirdly long for not much happening. And I thought that watching it, I was like, oh, this is the one little part that I'm not totally enthralled. It's a little bit boring, and then the rest of it, I'm totally into it.
Yeah, the rest is 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, yeah. So it seems like it just, that should have had some more trimming in the editing room. And so that's the one sequence where I feel like it's a little bit flawed. But
yeah, because they kind of separate, and then they come back together. Yeah. There's not a lot that happens in between.
No, so there's not a lot of meaning for the separation if they're only going to immediately reunite inside the Jawa sandcrawler. Yeah. This kind of a weird thing. I wonder if there's more purpose in an earlier draft of that script. And then it just kind of lost its purpose at three rewrites.
What about the stormtrooper? So I can't help but think that stormtroopers are a little bit, I don't know if they're camera shy or whatever you'd want to call it, but I can't help but think that they're a lot more dangerous when nobody's looking. Because, you're looking at the Jawa scene where they've gone in with devastation and there's a bunch of dead Jawas and...
Yeah,
and then you go over to Luke's old house, and there's scorching skeletons with burned flesh. I'm thinking, wait a second, are these the same stormtroopers that I just saw in a previous scene that couldn't hit?
Are these the droids we're looking for?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, wait, because there's scenes where Han Solo's running and shooting, they can't hit anything in front of him. So I can't help but feel like stormtroopers are a little bit like putties from Power Rangers, where they just kind of come out and
they're like brainless and they're just and totally
super easy, easy to kill. I remember just being young and just wanting to just take on as many stormtroopers as I could.
Wow. You did remind me of one other small nitpick.
Let's hear it.
It's like it affects the plot point, which is why it's a nitpick, and you may have heard this before. I'm certainly not the first person to bring it up. But when at the very beginning, when C-3PO and R2-D2 escape out of the pod down to Tatooine, and the guys in the Star Destroyer are like, oh, there's another pod. There's like, hold it, no life forms. And it's like, well, do you have a limited amount of lasers? Because maybe just blast it out.
Exactly. just for safe measure.
Like, how about let's not leave anything to chance and let's just blast the thing out of the sky? Because what do we have to lose, you know?
It turns out the
droids were on that thing, and Darth Vader's gonna kill me because I let that thing go. You know, like,
exactly. Oh, like, I must have short circuited.
Well, we'll let it go then. We wouldn't want to blast that thing out and have zero possibility of us screwing that up.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's so true.
So that's the one other part where I'm like, I laughed, and I've laughed in the past. It's just like, hold it, no life forms. Just, I want one guy back. Do you think maybe target practice? Let's just blast it out.
Like, exactly. Yeah. It's not like a bullet. You're going to run out of ammo. Yeah,
exactly.
No, well, it's a laser.
Three laser blasts left, guys. Let's use them wisely.
We're in this giant Death Star.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of Death Star, I just have to mention, when you're driving from California to Utah.
Death Star.
That exit. What is up with that exit?
Gets me every time.
It's called Death Star. Is it just some Star Wars fan that started some...
Clearly, it's not.
Bought some land up. It cannot be a coincidence.
It's not. Yeah, and because of probably intellectual property and copyrights, they couldn't make it DEATH like Death Star.
Oh my goodness!
They had
goodness.
To make it DEETHSTARR. And for people who don't know what I'm talking about, when you drive on Highway 80 between Sacramento and Salt Lake City, you're in the middle of Nevada, and there's this exit that's called the Death Star. I've never taken the exit before. I don't plan on taking the exit, but because I don't know if I'm going to like what's down that road.
Oh, I've seen it. I saw it in a movie once.
Well, pardon me. Every time I see it, I imagine exiting off with Lindsay and turning off the freeway and then immediately saying, that's no moon.
We're getting sucked in.
What are you doing? Get back on the freeway.
Suck me right in.
Suck me right in. Well, dude, I need to get you the Blu-rays of the Despecialized, man, Maybe, how about this? As my thank you for coming on the podcast, when I come into town, I guess for Christmas will be the next time, I'll bring you 3 Blu-rays of the 3 movies. So,
D-Stuff, you don't have to do that.
I will do it. I will do it with a Brave Little Podcast t-shirt made by our friends at www.dawnofthethread.com, sponsor the pod. So,
I accept this offer.
That's what I've been doing. I've been giving t-shirts to people who come and guest host, which is, I appreciate your time. You've got 3 young, beautiful girls and a wife at home and a crazy busy full-time job trying to help co-run a company. And you made time to jump on and talk stars with your old best friend here. So,
well, I had to appreciate it. I had to. No, I appreciate that. Well, speaking of my daughters, yeah, they were hoping to, they have some strong opinions about Star Wars. We've been actually watching all the Star Wars right before bed. We watched about 20 to 30 minutes every night before bed. Awesome. As we've been getting ready for this. So they were hoping to share some thoughts. Do you mind if they
great? Yeah, go join go in. Go get them, and then let's have a chat with them, and then we'll let them close out the pod as well. So
okay, well let me bring them here. Gwen, June, we're ready for you. Okay, Gwen, Uncle David is going to ask you some questions about Star Wars. Are you comfortable with that?
Mm-hmm. Okay, Gwen, let's get a little background. Gwen, how old are you? How old are you? You're 4 years old? Wow. So you're 4 and you just had your first experience recently watching Star Wars. Did you like the movie Star Wars?
Yes.
Why?
Because it's fun to watch.
What was your favorite part?
About Princess Leia kissed.
She kissed? Who did she kiss?
Luke Skywalker.
Okay. Whoa. So, who's your...
Skywalker.
Oh, you do? There's June.
That's June. Translation, I'm not Luke Skywalker.
Okay. Because it sounded a lot like, I know Luke Skywalker.
Actually, it sounded a lot like, I'm not Luke Skywalker.
So, June, I might know the answer. I might know the answer to this already, but who's your very favorite character in the movie? Princess Leia, Luke Skywalker, or Obi-Wan Kenobi?
How did you know Obi-Wan Kenobi?
How did I know?
Yeah.
Because I watched it too.
Oh.
Yeah. Was Darth Vader very scary?
It wasn't really Darth Vader.
Oh, who was it?
Oh, it was the little boy, Anakin. Oh, boy. It was Anakin when he was
Alec,
doing bad
what have you done?
Stuff. He growed up into that bad, bad, bad guy.
What's the bad, bad guy's name?
Anakin.
You know it. Darth.
Darth Vader! Luke, I know who I want to. Okay. I am.
Junie, you're yelling
Princess
into the mic.
Princess. I Anakin.
You're Anakin?
I Anakin.
Okay. Who does Anakin become?
Darth Vader.
Darth Vader.
That's right.
Gwen, would you say, what's a better movie, Star Wars or Frozen?
Star Wars.
Oh my gosh. Wow. You're raising them right, man. You're raising them right.
Doing something right around here.
Thanks so much for telling me all the stuff about Star Wars. I'm really happy to hear that you liked it better than Frozen.
Thanks for having me on my show.
And then can you say, hold on to your butts?
That's a bad word.
Oh. Whoops.
But just say it. Just say it. You can say it. Junie will say it.
Hold on to your butts.
Okay, ready? Hold on, say it.
Perfect.
Everyone together, really loud. 1, 2, 3.
Hold on to my butts.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts. JJ Abrams, please don't screw up episode 7.